Proverbs 4. Hear, O sons, a father's instruction, and be attentive that you may gain insight. For I give you good precepts. Do not forsake my teaching. When I was a son with my father, tender, the only one in the sight of my mother, he taught me and said to me, let your heart hold fast my words, keep my commandments and live. Get wisdom, get insight, do not forget, and do not turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will keep you. Love her, and she will guard you. The beginning of wisdom is this. Get wisdom, and whatever you get insight. Prize her highly, and she will exalt you. She will honor you if you embrace her. She will place on your head a graceful garland. She will bestow on you a beautiful crown. Hear, my son, and accept my words, that the years of your life may be many. I have taught you the way of wisdom. I have led you in the paths of uprightness. When you walk, your step will not be hampered, and if you run, you will not stumble. Keep hold of instruction. Do not let go. Guard her, for she is your life. Do not enter the path of the wicked, and do not walk in the way of the evil. Avoid it. Do not go on it. Turn away from it and pass on. For they cannot sleep unless they have done wrong. They are robbed of sleep unless they have made someone stumble. For they eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. But the path of the righteous is like the light of dawn, which shines brighter and brighter until full day. The way of the wicked is like deep darkness. They do not know over what they stumble. My son, be attentive to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Let them not escape from your sight. Keep them within your heart. For they are life to those who find them, and healing to all their flesh. Keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. Put away from you crooked speech, and put devious talk far from you. Let your eyes look directly forwards, and your gaze be straight before you. Ponder the path of your feet, then all your ways will be sure. Do not swerve to the right or to the left. Turn your foot away from evil.
Well, if I could add my welcome to Kev's, you should have an outline of the talk in your handout. That'll help you to keep with what we're going through today. And as Kev said, if you're joining us this evening, we've just come back from our weekend away. We've been looking at the book of Proverbs all weekend. So we're taking a break from our normal series in 1 Peter to have one more look at it this evening. A big part of our goal this weekend has just been to get excited about the book of Proverbs, to look at it and want to read it more. And so if you couldn't make it to the weekend away, don't worry. Tonight is your taster for what we've been looking at in the rest of our book. Our chapter today gets right to the heart of the message of the book, and I hope it'll give you a handle on why it's such an exciting and important book for us to read. And if you've been with us on the weekend away, isn't it easy to come back full of good intentions? Maybe you've decided to read your 5 Proverbs a day, and you're raring to go. But like with New Year's resolutions, isn't it easy to do that sort of thing for a few days and then get out of the habit? So whether Proverbs is a lifelong favourite or if you've never looked at it before, tonight's passage should give you a handle on how to apply the whole book And it's my aim this evening to convince you that it really is worth making the time and the effort to get to grips with it. And to get us there, the first thing that we have to do is our first point on the handout. It's to realize the priceless value of wisdom. Realize the priceless value of wisdom. Look with me at verse 7. The beginning of wisdom is this. Get wisdom, and whatever you get understanding. Whatever you get, get understanding, get wisdom. Proverbs is saying that of all the things that you could possibly get out of life, wisdom is the most valuable. It's the most important thing that you could get out of life. Wisdom should be the priority that comes before all other things. So it doesn't say, whatever you get a first, or get married, or get that promotion, or get a house in the suburbs, or get your kids into a good school. No, it says, if you can get just one thing out of life, get wisdom. Everything else has to come second. Just look at all the ways that the passage describes how we should pursue wisdom. Here, as quite often in the Proverbs, wisdom is poetically described as a woman. She's often called Lady Wisdom. And look how we're supposed to treat her. Verse 6 says, do not forsake her. Love her. In verse 8 we get, prize her highly. The NIV says, cherish her and embrace her. They're all straight out of the wedding vows, aren't they? To love her, cherish her, embrace her, never to forsake her. We are supposed to be absolutely wedded to wisdom. Now, we probably all know a story of someone who's gone to ridiculous lengths to have the person that they love. I know someone who doesn't have a sporty bone in his body, but he started going to the gym 3 times a week after he met his dream girl. He took up 5K running so that he could pretend to enjoy it with her, secretly dying on the inside, of course. In the end, he was so head over heels for her that he even took a year out of his degree so that he could switch to her subject for a year and hang out with her in the lab. To everyone around him, it looked like madness. But for him, well, he had to be with her. She was the only one for him. That's how we're supposed to feel about wisdom. Get wisdom, and whatever you get understanding. Let's just remember what we're talking about here. Wisdom in Proverbs isn't about philosophy. It's not about life hacks. It's not even about pithy, wise sayings, though you'll find plenty of those in the book. Instead, we see right at the start of the book, in the introduction, that wisdom is about the fear of the Lord. It's about a right relationship with God, lived out in all of the messiness and the details and the grey areas of life. That's what Proverbs is saying that we should be wedded to. Understanding how to live out a right relationship with God. And I guess that means being wedded to wisdom means that we can't treat wisdom as just a side hobby that we might have. You know, something that we do at the weekends or midweek, but that isn't sort of the central issue in our lives. No, wisdom is far too precious for that. Proverbs is telling us that wisdom should be less like a hobby and more like a passionate love affair. Wisdom should be like the spouse that you daydream about when you're at work or carve out time for when you get home, the one that you look forward to seeing because that's the bit that makes your day, the one you can't stop talking about. That's how we're supposed to feel about wisdom. So it's worth pausing to think about whether that's how we actually do feel about wisdom. You know, in our heart of hearts, how would we end the sentence, whatever you get blank? Maybe that would be a good question to chat about after the service or to think about in your quiet times this week. What are the things that we daydream about that make our day, that we carve out time for? Because our passage is telling us, and I find this very challenging myself, that if anything other than wisdom is topping the list, we're undervaluing wisdom. It's a priceless treasure. And I think that means that we should be getting really excited about what we've seen in Proverbs this weekend. God has given us access to the one thing that we really need in life. Proverbs is a priceless treasure. So the economy might be looking a bit dodgy. Maybe getting the deposit together on a house seems an insurmountable task. Or your student loan maybe is massive. But if this is true, if this is really true, you're potentially a lot wealthier than you might think. Because the most valuable thing in the world is sitting between your hands. According to Proverbs, the billionaire who lacks wisdom lacks the one thing that you really need in life. They're far, far worse off than the poorest person who has wisdom. Do we realize what a priceless treasure God's given us? But Proverbs isn't just a cerebral book that's there to fill your mind with ideas. It's a deeply practical book that leads to a certain way of life. And that's our next point on the handout. Proverbs wants us to choose the only safe path through life. Choose the only safe path through life. Verses 10 to 19 are dominated by two different paths, aren't they? On the one hand, in verse 11, there's the way of wisdom, or the paths of uprightness. And on the other, verse 14 introduces the path of the wicked, or the way of evil. And a big part of what the whole book of Proverbs is doing is warning us that the way of wisdom is the only safe path through life. It's the only safe path. Verse 12 promises that as you walk down it, in fact, even if you run down it, there's no risk of falling over. Verse 18, I love verse 18. It's a beautiful image, isn't it? The path of the righteous is like the light of dawn, which shines brighter and brighter until full day. Now, I don't know about you, at this time of year, if I'm honest, I'd rather see a bit less of the light of dawn than I do at the moment. We're getting perilously close to that time of year where Jane starts texting me beautiful pictures of the sun rising as she arrives at school. But the point here isn't about getting up early. The point is that once you're on the path of the righteous, it's only going to get brighter. When you first set off on that road, maybe it's still dark, maybe only barely lighter than the night time. But slowly and surely, it gets brighter and brighter. Every day is a better day than yesterday. Every step of the way, the best days are yet to come. And eventually, the destination is glory. Full day. It's not, of course, that nothing goes wrong for wise people. Proverbs, not to mention the rest of the Bible, is aware that we all experience difficulties and trials. But for the person who's walking down the way of wisdom, even those trials work for their good. It's absolutely impossible to stumble if you're on the path of the righteous. But the path of the wicked couldn't be more different, could it? The father in our passage is desperate to ram home for us that it is very, very dangerous. For one thing, it seems like it's almost impossible to get off once you get on. The people in verse 16, down at the bottom of the page, they're deeply addicted to wrongdoing, aren't they? They can't sleep if they haven't done something wrong or made someone stumble. Of course, it's not like that from the moment that you set foot down the path, but it is where it leads. It's a stark warning that if you choose that path now, you might find that you're not able to turn back later. And that's incredibly dangerous because of the kind of path that it is. Verse 19 says it's like deep darkness. They do not know over what they stumble. If the way of wisdom is always getting brighter and brighter, a trip down the way of the wicked is like driving at night through thick fog with no street lights when your headlights are broken. The crash is inevitable. You won't see it coming and you won't know what's hit you when it happens. Sobering stuff, isn't it, at the end of the weekend? And the application couldn't be clearer. On the one hand, verse 13 says we should keep hold of instruction. Do not let go. Guard her, for she is your life. And on the other, look at all the commands in verse 14 and 15. Do not enter. Do not walk. Avoid. Don't go on it. Turn away. Pass on. One of these roads is a death trap. The other is the path to life. I guess probably the first step to applying this is simply to realize that there really are only two real options here. There really are only two ways to live. Either the way of living out a right relationship with God, or the way of living without Him. I think we often think that we and our friends and colleagues, we're all somewhere in the middle, aren't we? You know, we might not be doing too much to go after wisdom, but we don't do anything too crazy either. But today's passage just doesn't let us hedge our bets like that, does it? And it's only as we see that there's only two ways to live that we're able to see that neglecting wisdom is incredibly dangerous. I think, certainly this is how I often think about the book of Proverbs, I think we often think about the book of Proverbs as a book of wise sayings that will help make our lives better if we follow them. Useful advice maybe, but nothing more. But the stakes here are high. This is about life and death. Proverbs wasn't written just to make our lives a little better, but to save our lives from the destruction that results from a life of folly and evil. Now, I'd assume that most of us here are looking to walk in the way of wisdom. We trust in Jesus to give us a right relationship with God, and we're trying to live that out in our day-to-day lives. And our passage today is pleading with us to stay on that road. It isn't always easy, but it's the only safe path through life. I guess we've been seeing that if you've been with us for the last few weeks in 1 Peter, haven't we? The life of an elect exile isn't always easy, is it? In fact, sometimes it's really difficult. But it's an amazingly privileged life. And it leads in the end to glory. What Proverbs is adding to our perspective today is a warning about how dangerous it is to stray from that path. There are loads of reasons, aren't there, why we're tempted to dabble in sin as Christians. Sometimes it's just that we're tired of fighting a particular temptation. Other times we tell ourselves it's not a big sin, so it's not a big deal. But our passage today is warning us that there are no safe sins. If we allow ourselves to drift down that path, we're liable to end up in places that we never expected to go when we started. And we may find in the end that we're not really able to turn back. Even that we don't really want to turn back. And at that point, we're looking disaster right in the face. And it's because of those life and death stakes that our third point makes perfect sense. Our passage closes today with an instruction to keep our hearts with all vigilance. To keep our hearts with all vigilance. Look at verse 23 with me. Keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. Your heart here, of course, it's not the muscle for pumping blood around your body. This verse isn't about making sure that you get some cardio into your regime. The heart here is the inner you. And keeping your heart means guarding it. Keeping a close watch on it, paying close attention to it. We should look at our hearts and see what it is that they're doing. And it says that we should do that with all vigilance, doesn't it? When it comes to your heart, we're not looking at a 6-monthly checkup. We're talking maximum surveillance. We should be constantly checking our hearts and guarding them against folly and evil. And the second half of the verse explains why we should keep our hearts with all vigilance, for from it flows the springs of life. All of your life flows out of your heart. What comes out of your heart determines what every other part of you does. So in these last 8 verses, we've got mention of loads of body parts. There's ears, there's your eyes, there's your mouth, there's your feet. But it all flows from the heart. That's why the verse before can say that wise words here are a healing to all your flesh, your whole body. Because if wisdom makes its way into your heart, everything else you do with your body will fall into place. So Proverbs is saying that when it comes to wisdom, go to the source of your life, the heart. Isn't it true that we often try to settle for managing our behavior rather than changing our hearts? I think it's often a lot easier and the visible results are much quicker. So we know that if we struggle to control our temper, maybe a few anger management techniques can soon suppress the worst outbursts. And that's good as far as it goes. I mean, there's a lot about behavior in our passage. But it won't have done anything to deal with the underlying heart issues that were causing the anger in the first place. What are we thinking and feeling about God in those situations? What are we thinking and feeling about ourselves or other people? Who are we looking to serve? What do we want so badly that we fly off the handle if we can't get it? And why do we want that thing so badly? All those issues will still be bubbling away under our newly zen exterior, and they'll find a way to come to the surface soon enough. And so the more I've thought about it, the more it's challenged the way I think of the Proverbs as a whole. Maybe it's just me, but in the past I've often thought of the Proverbs as being hundreds of little rules or snippets of advice on everything from anger to marriage to friendship. But if the key to it all is the heart, well, perhaps we should think of them as hundreds of ways of looking at what's in your heart. Hundreds of little diagnoses of what's going on in human hearts as they feel angry or get married or make friends. Proverbs can't just be a book about our behavior. It has to be a book, doesn't it, that helps us keep our hearts. So the next time you read a chapter from Proverbs, you might want to ask yourself, what do the Proverbs in this chapter say about my heart? It's striking, I think, as well, that verse 23 reminds us that none of us are wise by nature. Of course, some of us might be born with more than our fair share of common sense, but true wisdom, living in the fear of the Lord, doesn't come naturally to any of us. If our hearts naturally gravitated towards wisdom, there'd be no need to be vigilant as we watch them. We could simply leave them to get on with growing wiser and wiser. But our proverb reminds us that it isn't that way. By nature, we all tend towards foolishness and sin. And that means, I guess, and this is tough, isn't it, that wisdom isn't ever going to be something that just happens on its own. It takes a deliberate effort on our part to ensure that wisdom stays in our hearts. And that effort has to be a continual, lifelong effort. Wisdom isn't just something that you can nail on a weekend away or through a particular religious experience or by reading a particular book. No, it takes a continual, vigilant effort to guard our hearts in the day to day. So it'd be worth putting aside some time in the next week to think about how well you know what's going on in your heart. How often do you think about it? Of course, there's a kind of introspection that's unhealthy, that spends all of its time looking within and never looking to God and his grace in the gospel. But it's actually far more dangerous just to assume that everything is going okay in your heart and to float through life without thinking about it very much. Instead, we should be continually looking into our hearts and bringing whatever we find there to God and his grace in the gospel. And we should be continually looking at God and his grace in the gospel and bringing whatever we see there to bear not only on our actions, but right down to the level of our hearts. In fact, Proverbs is a book that we should be coming back to again and again. It's a priceless treasure. It's a lifelong journey that gets brighter and brighter. It's a continual watch that we must keep. Wouldn't it be great if 5 or 10 years down the line we were still excited by Proverbs? Wouldn't it be great if the Proverbs in the book of Proverbs tripped off the tongue as easily as a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush, or a watched pot never boils, or look before you leap? And wouldn't it be wonderful if we were 5 or 10 years wiser, serving the King and blessing those around us better? Proverbs can show us the way. Whatever you do, get wisdom.
We're going to respond to what we've heard in prayer. Gideon.